Welcome to As the Story Goes. On this podcast, you'll be hearing interviews with different average anonymous people who have graciously agreed to share parts of their story with me. In these stories, you will hear pain, revelation, hope, and so many other things that we as humans can connect to. I created this podcast because I believe that hearing the stories of others makes us into more empathetic and compassionate human beings. As you listen, I invite you to consider the following questions. I quote one of my favorite podcasters, Adam Young, from the podcast, The Place We Find Ourselves. He poses the questions, what does it mean to hold with honor the story of another human being whom you don't know? And how can you receive the story with both a sense of sacredness and a sense of gratitude, knowing that it has cost them something to share their story in a public way? Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So where are you recording from?
I am currently in Bend, Oregon.
And you live there?
No, I do not. I'm visiting, actually. Well, I live in an RV. We've lived in an RV for about a year and a half now. But it's currently in the shop, and we're staying with some friends. It's in Portland right now, and we are visiting friends in Bend.
Okay, so maybe I'm being a little bit stereotypical, but I think there are only two kinds of people who live in RVs. There are people who really don't want the police to raid them, or there are people who are on like a reality show on the Travel Channel. Mm-hmm. So which one are you?
Neither. We're just average Joes, really, you know, trying to travel as much as we can while we can. We sold our house in 2018 and got the wild idea to buy an RV, and we gutted it, renovated it, and we've been living in it now for, like I said, a year and a half. And, you know, it has had its ups and downs for sure. It is not a magical experience necessarily, but it does have its moments.
It sounds magical. Like that, it sounds like the kind of thing that people who are overwhelmed with the busyness of their lives really romanticize. Like, let's just sell it all, mm-hmm. buy an RV, and travel. And that you're not retired, right? How old are you?
No, I'm 30. My husband's 29. And yeah, we have remote jobs that allow us to be really flexible and travel and pursue other interests. But yeah, it was exhilarating to sell our house, sell tons of our stuff, and move into this rig. But it has definitely made our lives more difficult sometimes. Yeah. And other times easier. But there's a definite learning curve that comes with living in an RV that you can't really prepare yourself for, you know. We bought an older RV too that's had some issues. And the highs are really high, but the lows are really low.
Mm. What has been the lowest moment so far?
Maybe when we have the tanks have gotten a little too full, and like the gray tank, which is our sink and shower runoff, it just starts to smell terrible. And you wouldn't think it was, you'd think it was the shitter, you know, but it's not. It's just the sink and shower runoff, but it's sitting there, and then it gets too full, and then it just, you're moving and the smell is just coming up around you, and you're like, dear God, get me out of here. But yeah, we've had some expensive repairs that have been a real pain in the ass, but then we've really been able to travel and see some incredible things and just kind of escape some hard stuff, and or as best we can, really. But yeah, there have been some really beautiful
highest
moments.
What's the highest moment so far?
Oh gosh, probably last summer. We spent the entire summer in Colorado, and we just hopped around from town to town. We dry camped mostly, which is when you're living off of, I'm getting into RV lingo here. You're living off of, you're living off of your own supplies. So your own freshwater supply and your own, you know, tank capacity. And, your generator. And we kind of did that all summer long. We played a lot of music and just got to be outside so much and escape the Oklahoma heat. That's where I'm originally from, Oklahoma. And yeah, it was, that was a magical summer.
Do you remember the moment when you closed on your house and handed over the keys and knew that the only thing you had to live in was an RV?
I do remember leaving our house for the last time and feeling weird about how I think selling our house made me realize how unsentimental I am. And really? So many of our friends have been like, don't you miss your old house? And do you ever drive by? Because we did live in Norman for a bit longer after we sold our house. And I was like, no, I haven't thought about it one single time.
Really?
I just don't get sentimental about places. And I left and feeling like I'm just ready for the next thing. I'm not thinking about how sad I am at all. I'm just not. It makes me wonder about my soul, but you know, it's fine.
What do you get sentimental about?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm just, sentimental to me insinuates like a past. I have fond memories. It's not that I don't think back on things and think about how great times were, but I don't really get sentimental about much. I don't think about the past that much at all. I remember talking about this with you actually about, you know, the Enneagram and the tenses, whether you're past, present, or future, mm-hmm. forward thinking. And I'm just like, I'm not a past tense person. I don't know.
Interesting. What's your number?
8.
And I'm trying to remember if they are present or future oriented. Do you remember?
I don't remember.
I don't either. But apparently they're not past oriented.
I don't think so.
So what do you remember fondly? If you don't identify as a sentimental person, and you know, maybe I wonder about the reasons for that. I'm curious, but what do you remember fondly?
From our time in Norman, or from my childhood?
What's the first thing that stands out to you when I use that phrase? Remember fondly.
Right. I think of my family. I think of my parents and wrestling with my dad, and my dad reading us stories, you know, before bed, and the cats I had growing up, Christmases. Grandparents. I think about a lot of those things. I think maybe even now I'm kind of recognizing this in myself, like I it makes me sad. So maybe part of me not thinking about the past is avoiding that, you know, that melancholy or that sadness that comes up. It could totally be a thing.
So it could be that you're sentimental, but you're avoiding something painful.
Right.
And happy memories also bring with it some pain. Why pain? Where's the pain coming from?
Yeah, with my family, there's just been so much the past few years, especially with my parents, that's changed so much of my life and our family dynamics as a whole, that it's hard for me to think about my childhood or what were fond memories and not feel super heavy afterwards.
As you say that, we're on Zoom, so I can see you, but I can even see your body just kind of, it shrinks a little bit. How does it feel to talk about that?
You know, I don't mind talking about it with people close to me, and I kind of pride myself on authenticity and just being really honest. I appreciate that in other people, and that's who I want to be, but it's difficult to talk about it knowing that people are going to hear, and it feels so vulnerable to expose that part of me.
So why do it?
Because I do think it's important, and I've heard so many podcasts and stories of even like Instagram accounts, you know, where people are talking about their experiences, and other people sharing their pain is so healing and so cathartic, and it's been so helpful for me. So yeah, I don't mind. I want to share what I can if it's helpful for other people.
Well, it sounds like it's something that is current. It's a current pain.
Definitely.
And it's unresolved. And I think that's the thing about vulnerability, is a lot of times we trick ourselves into thinking that we're being vulnerable because we're talking about something hard, but it's something from the past, or that we feel like we've already conquered or resolved. And I think we could maybe call that transparency. But vulnerability is literally allowing ourselves to be exposed, and there's a risk in being exposed.
Yes.
And so talking about something that's actually going on that's not resolved brings with it a real feeling of being exposed.
That resonates with me a lot. My husband and I talked about this, where I think I'm really good at being transparent, but I'm not that good at being vulnerable.
Yeah. Being an 8, that doesn't work in your favor either.
Yeah.
But 8 or not, vulnerability isn't easy for anybody. So if you're willing, what happened?
So, you know, to try to fit this in a bit of a nutshell, we have had a kind of a tumultuous couple of years leaving church, deconstructing our faith, and for my side of the family, having it fall apart a bit. We were both on staff at a charismatic evangelical church in Norman, Oklahoma. And through a series of things, one of them being the 2016 election, some things specific to that church that didn't feel peaceful to us, and then things that were kind of more overarching issues, I think, with the American church, we just kind of hit a rock bottom of sorts and needed space and needed to get out. So through that experience and leaving church, and we haven't really gone back at this point, my relationship with my parents, who I grew up in a very, you know, kind of the epitome of what you'd think of as fundamentalist, evangelical, conservative Christian home. My parents are quite, you know, devout, and faith is the most important thing in my home growing up. I would leave school every morning. My dad would say, "Live for Jesus," and then you'd get home and watch TV, and he'd say, "What have you done for God today?" You know, mm-hmm. Just kind of all encompassing in our family. It's just the culture of our home. So, for my parents, us leaving church, especially after being on staff, and I kind of talk about it like I was kind of a bit of a golden child, and I felt like you know, really hit the bottom there, but. They had a really hard time with our journey and the questions we're asking, the places that we're landing or not landing. And so 2019 was pretty rough, and we had some really hard conversations. We tried to draw some boundaries with my parents that they did not appreciate. And in right before Thanksgiving in this past year, 2019, my dad called me to tell me that we were not invited to my family Thanksgiving anymore, and that he could not continue a relationship with us due to our stance on being LGBTQ affirming specifically. And I have not spoken to my dad since, and it's been truly the hardest thing I've ever walked through. It's been really hard on me and my siblings. It's been awful.
Did you ever expect it?
Oh, no, I never did. And, you know, he knows the Bible really better than, you know, a lot of people I know. And he's pretty dogmatic with the way that he talks about it. And he's hard to argue with. But he had all his verses kind of lined up with, he used the Bible to justify this decision and, you know, say that it's so obvious in scripture that this is what he's called to do as a follower of Jesus. And we just see God so differently. But I never expected this. Never, the thought never crossed my mind that this would happen. And that makes me wonder if maybe I was being naive or stupid or something. But yeah, it never crossed my
mind. What was more surprising to you? Was it your change, so to speak, from the culture that you grew up in? Or was it the fact that your dad was willing to cut you off?
I think it's all been surprising. I've been surprised at myself. I'm thinking things and I'm in places spiritually, politically, you know, that I never thought I would be, that I scoffed at 2 years ago, that I judged so hard, you know. But I think I was more surprised by my dad and by his ability to do that to me. Mm. in my mom, her willingness to stand by and be okay with it. I've been surprised by a lot in my family through this situation, but it's quite, I think, controversial even in Christian circles that he's doing this. So yeah, it was a shock to me, and still is. I still kind of, I think about it, and I'm like, how is this happening? How is he justifying this and using the Bible and God as like a weapon to divide our family and to use against me? I don't know that I'll ever understand it.
Do you remember the moment he called you?
Yes.
What was that like?
Shock is the only word. We were at my in-laws, at Johnny's parents. And I was actually really grateful to be there because they've been amazing and so thoughtful and comforting through all of this. But he called me and I immediately knew, you know, something was weird about the conversation. And he told me that he can't continue a relationship with me. And that I said, so I'm not invited to Thanksgiving. And he said, no. It was a really short conversation. I was so shocked that I couldn't really get thoughts out. I couldn't really argue with him at that point. I did call him back the next day with some further questions. But since then, I haven't spoken to him. But yeah, I remember exactly where I was and just the feeling of, you know, just like heat radiating through your body and just, I mean, immediate like pain. You're just weeping and could not believe it.
Are you angry?
Yes, I am. I'm extremely angry. I kind of oscillate between sadness and anger. And I think my challenge right now is letting myself feel those things and give myself space for those emotions. But also, I don't want to let them and their fear or hatred, whatever is fueling this decision, to make me an ugly person. Like, I don't want to return what they're doing with just more of the same from like hate in my heart or bitterness. So I think it's like holding on to my humanity really and trying to figure out what it is to love them from afar, despite all of this. I mean, they're my parents. They raised me, and I'm so grateful for so much of what they gave to me and what they taught me and they've done for me. But even thinking of those things brings up, it's just kind of a constant cycle of that makes me sad, really sad. And then I get angry again, and then I come back to trying to come back to, like, you know, my true self and who I want to be. Anyway, it's a journey.
Do you think reconciliation is possible?
I will never shut the door to reconciliation with them. I think it is hard to think about reconciliation. That's been one of the things I've had to, I think, mourn and grieve the most, is that regardless of, say, we did have somewhat of a relationship again someday, they would really, it would be so foolish of me to give them any more than a fraction of myself, because I've, you know, I've basically reached the limits of their love and acceptance. I know what it is now. So why would I ever be honest with them or vulnerable with them ever again? I can't allow myself to do that with them. That being said, I would never shut the door completely on, you know, if we were to be invited to like family get-togethers again, I think we would go, but it would be, I have to have a wall up with them forever.
Nothing ever will be the same.
No, it can't be. I don't know how it could possibly ever be the same. So that's the hardest thing, I think, for me, is realizing that my dad, you know, kind of played the card that can't be unplayed. You know, he like just went all the way to this place that I never saw things going there, even though our relationship was hard and it was tense before this.
When you say that you were so shocked, never thought it would come to this, sounds like you had a lot of trust for them. Did you, when you think about growing up with them as your parents, did you idealize them?
My dad, for sure. I've always had a lot of respect, and there's so much I admire and respect about my dad. He does not give a shit what anyone thinks about him. And I love that about him. And he has such strong convictions, and I like that about him too. But yes, I think I relied on him so heavily to to guide me, especially spiritually. My dad has always been, the spiritual, like, fist, iron fist, if you will, of like my home. If I had a question, I just called my dad and asked him. He knew the Bible way better than me, and so I would just kind of take his word for it. I think part of the unraveling of my faith was realizing that my dad's not right about everything, and I can't just trust his word for it, and I can't just trust my pastor's word for it, for what's true.
And that unraveling started before this happened.
Yes, at least a year before.
Wow. So for a whole year, the tension was building.
Yes.
And then that phone call was the climax.
Yes, absolutely.
But as a kid, he was a good dad.
Yes, he
And
really was.
you felt you trusted him. What
For
about
sure.
your mom?
My mom, I never had a lot of trust in, never relied on her for very much. I feel in our relationship growing up that I was the one really who had to be strong for her, and she kind of relied on me because she's always been a little emotionally unstable, lives with a lot of guilt. And she, from a pretty young age, treated me as more of a confidant and more of a friend than a daughter. So, thinking about the Enneagram and being an eight, I think of my mom as kind of the source of that childhood wounding of feeling like I had to protect myself and that I had to grow up quick because my mom shared things with me and that she shouldn't have. And I was kind of, I think my childhood just ended too early.
So, I know that from I know from the work that I do that a lot of times whenever one of the parents is confiding in the child, we're treating them as sort of a confidant, a peer. It's what we call triangulation. And it is typically a indicator that there is a disconnect in the marriage. Did you know that there were marital issues?
Yes. The very we,
Because she told you about it.
she told me about it. She's very open with me about that, and it was just obvious. I remember in middle school, my parents going through a really bad bout where my dad slept at my grandma's for a bit. They never were a team. They butt heads over money, over how to parent. There just wasn't a lot of compromise between the two of them and terrible communication and then pain and wounding that I don't think they ever really dealt with or got help with or so yeah. And when I would want to get my way, I would because my dad over here is extremely strict and my mom's just kind of, lenient and just do whatever you want. And so I would kind of work the system to get to go do things and do what I wanted. And then that would cause issues for them and they would get angry at each other. So yeah, it was obvious for all my siblings, I think, that they didn't have a super, super stable marriage.
So on one hand, it sounds like, I mean, your family was kind of picture perfect, and you had your dad on a pedestal as this, you or both your parents maybe as sort of these upstanding moral parents, and you trusted them. And but on the other hand, there was a lot of tension and conflict going on, and painful dynamics, and you were sort of thrust into it by way of that triangulation. It almost sounds like two parallel like worlds going on. How did you deal with that? How did you hold that tension as a kid or a teenager?
I don't know, and it's I think this is the first time I've thought of it in that way, but it's so true that I did have my dad on a pedestal, and he was for my whole family, he was really the epitome of what you should be as a Christian. He would evangelize and he would serve in the church and he just did all the things you're supposed to do. And my mom, on the other hand, was not that way. I never really had a lot of respect for my mom, in kind of any way. But it was very important to my mother that things looked a certain way, that no one knew any of our shit. or her shit, or yeah, it was very important to her that things all look good on the outside.
Did you accommodate to that?
Not really. It's always, I think, gone against who I am as a person, because I don't care about that at all. And I think I always valued just honesty and being able to be myself and being able to talk about things, that I would kind of process things she would say to me or things she told me with friends or my boyfriends. And she would ask me, like, have you told anyone? Have you told anyone about this? And I would just lie to appease her, because I don't think she could handle the emotional stress it would cause if I were to just say, yeah, I have told people, you know. So that was stressful too.
So then when you left, when you grew up and you left home, what was that like? Who did you become?
Gosh, when I left home, I think I was simultaneously trying to find out who I am and, you know, spread my wings, if you will. But at the same time, I so wanted to be someone my dad was proud of. And it's still to this day painful for me to think about the fact that my dad is not proud of me. He's not. So yeah, kind of wanting to do the right things, but just kind of having a rebellious nature. It's just how I am. I kind of want to push the boundaries. And that's something my parents have always resented about me. But now I'm kind of like, I really wish they could have seen that as something to be nurtured and like stewarded almost into like a healthy direction. But yeah, I think I wanted to be in church. I wanted to be, you know, doing all the things, but I was really trying to figure out who I was. I think I didn't find out until too late in my 20s. Too late, whatever, who cares? But, you know, later than I would have preferred, I guess, in my 20s, like just trying to make myself fit into a certain mold that I don't think was meant for me. So
still trying to hold the tension between being yourself and being just a little bit of a rebel and pushing the boundaries on life. And I won't be controlled, but also I just want to make my dad proud.
Yeah.
Man, that's a lot of tension to hold.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets?
Such a good question. You know, I've thought back to these conversations I had with him about controversial issues, the main one for him being the issue of homosexuality as it pertains to Christianity. And I've thought, maybe I just shouldn't have been so honest. Maybe I should have just kept my mouth shut when he asked me about it. Maybe I just shouldn't have sent him this article that was compelling to me. Maybe I shouldn't have just gone there at all. And I keep coming back to the fact that I don't regret that. I don't regret being honest. I can't. I don't think that I can lie to someone's face like that or hide my true self. So I don't think I have any regrets, really. And I think so much of my journey has just been, it wasn't like I woke up one day and was like, I'm just going to decide to kind of throw away this whole life that I'd built in the church, leading worship, doing all these things. It felt like it was inescapable. It happened to me is what it felt like, especially when shit hit the fan, you know. But
I noticed how you said, you know, I can't not be honest. I can't lie just to appease somebody and let them think that I am someone I'm not. But just a minute ago, a few minutes ago, you told me, you know, my mom would ask me about what I was doing or who I was telling or whatever. And I would just lie because I didn't want to deal with the consequence.
Yeah.
So what a contrast about where you are now.
That's so true. I lied a lot in high school. Mm-hmm. I lied to get my way. I lied to hang out with my boyfriend. It was not an issue for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's just part of growing into who I am and figuring out what I do value and maturing, you know, growing up a little bit.
So this RV lifestyle, selling it all and hitting the road and trying to, you know, you said you renovated the RV. So you didn't just buy some like skanky RV and just, you took it. Is that still a word? You took it and you made something really beautiful out of it. I mean, I've seen the pictures. It's really beautiful. It's
Thank
very
you.
Joanna Gaines worthy. What an amazing metaphor for the what your life has been, leaving everything that was safe and secure. And, you know, with your dad, maybe it was you were forced out. You didn't make the choice to leave, but here you are making the best you can out of it. I think obviously, I'm not going to make assumptions about your dad's spiritual life, but it sounds like he has a certain type of theology and certain beliefs about the nature of God that you don't share. What about you? What do you think about who God is? Who is he to you now?
What a question. Oh gosh, I can spin out so quickly because I have so many big questions that, you know, theological questions, even philosophical questions. But I know I always come back to believing that God is good and that I have a knowing inside of me that God is present, that God is near, and that he's better than I think he is. So when I'm met with theology that kind of makes God out to be an asshole or vindictive or vengeful, I just can't get on board. So I do not have anything figured out, but I'm very much on a journey of trying to understand who God is. And man, there have been so many times where it really would have been easier to just throw in the towel on my faith in general. But I just can't, because I have like a soul knowing that God is near and he's present and he's good. And that's kind of my foundation that I keep coming back to. And a lot of the, so much else I just don't know about. But that's kind of where I am right now.
Well, I think God can handle the questions.
I agree.
Are you an Oprah fan?
I'm not really. I haven't watched a lot of Oprah. I know she does a lot of stuff. I just... not very familiar.
So in her magazine, O Magazine, there's this section that is at the end of like every issue. And it's one that she writes, and it's called What I Know for Sure. And it seems like if you were writing that and you were writing about your relationship with God, your spiritual life, what would be underneath that? What I know for sure is he is good and he is near, and that's enough. It's enough for now.
Yeah.
If I were to ask you that question, what do you know for sure about anything in life outside of your spiritual life, relationships, emotional health, any of that, what would you say?
That's hard. I'm trying to think of things that don't sound too hokey, you know?
Okay, you can be
weird.
Oh man,
I think I know that we make each other better, truly, that we know what love is because of how God made us, and I don't have to, I think, guess at what is going to be the loving action towards someone, because I know in my body what love feels like to give and receive. I think that's something that can be so confusing, even in my situation. My parents, I know that my parents think that they're loving me. I know that they love me, and this is, in their twisted way, what they truly believe is the best way to love me. But for me, that feels kind of gaslighting, a little like, I know this isn't love because this is the most painful thing I've ever walked through, so you can't tell me that this is loving. Mm-hmm. So,
but you are giving them the benefit of the doubt to say, I think that this is the only way they know how to love me.
I believe that, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's comforting or even more painful.
Oh, I think that's one that just, it's so frustrating. And yeah, it makes me angry at them, angry at God a little bit that they could be so confused about who he is and what he would ask of them.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, what are you going to do?
So what you know for sure is that we make each other better. At least that's the goal. Would you reword that? You've got a look on your face
I don't know. I don't know if I would exactly say it that way. I mean, I literally just said it that way, but oh man, I think something that I've come to know, and is that people are generally good, which is the opposite of what I was raised to believe, that people have value. And yeah, we do make each other better, I think. I would lump that all into that phrase.
Well, I've known you for a long time, and I know that you have made me better. You have kept me on my toes for a lot of years.
Oh.
You force people to ask the hard questions, whether you're meaning to or not, and that is a good thing. Mm. I think that's a good thing.
Thank you.
So, my last question.
Okay.
What are you looking forward to?
Oh, man. What am I looking forward to? Oh, my husband and I have a band called Westerlight, and we're about to release a record, which I'm really, really excited about. It's a piece of my soul, I think, in so many ways. Just really honest glimpse into our past couple of years. I'm really excited about that. We're going to be in Oregon for the next month or so, and I'm excited to do some more exploring. And yeah. I'll leave it at that.
So you are a musician that's actually making records.
I was the first one, but yeah.
You live in a modern farmhouse RV. How is this not magical?
because Leah, the shitter gets full, you know, and then when you're driving from Utah to Oregon, the breaker box starts smoking and you have to take the RV into the shop, and then you're out of a house with your cat, you know, stuff like that. But there are magical moments, I will say that.
The shitter gets full. And such is life.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Goes. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes, because that makes it easier for others to find it. Also, if you have an idea for a podcast that you would like to see come to life, I invite you to visit Ready Set Podcast on social media or on their website. They are the ones that have produced this podcast, and they make it super easy to do that. They have prices to fit any budget. They have options for both hobbyists and professional podcasters. Basically, if you have a brilliant idea, they will help you turn it into a reality. They'll give you a free consultation if you just reach out to them. Again, it's called Ready Set Podcast. You can visit them on social media, or their website is www.readysetpodcast.xyz.